The CRTC wants to know how radio, TV, and digital platforms in Canada can best meet the needs of Indigenous viewers, listeners, and content creators. Join the conversation today at crtc.gc.ca/indigenous-broadcasting.
A message from the Government of Canada.
Le CRTC veut savoir comment la radio, la télévision et les plateformes numériques au Canada peuvent mieux répondre aux besoins des spectateurs, auditeurs et créateurs de contenus autochtones. Joignez-vous à la conversation aujourd'hui au crtc.gc.ca/radiodiffusion/autochtone.
Un message du gouvernement du Canada.
We are APTN Investigates. On this episode,
child abuse, lobotomies, stolen kids. 80 years later, the story of Quebec's Duplessis orphans still horrifies. I'm Tom Fenario. Find out more in my episode, Orphans of Church and State.
Quebec will have to reckon with the way that their dead are being treated here, as this is very alarming.
They were just children and they had their lives stolen.
We started discovering very intimate links between Duplessis orphans and the way that Indigenous children were also treated.
Puis là, le prêtre puis le médecin nous a rentré dans son char. Elle nous a poussé dans un char qu'on peut embarquer, puis moi je voulais pas embarquer, puis ils m'ont forcé d'embarquer, puis je pleurais tout le temps pour ma mère.
Le malheur puis le péché, puis le prêtre, puis le crime, puis les religieux, puis l'avant-maman. Ils ne rentrent pas au paradis, ils vont aller aux enfers.
Here in Joliet, Quebec, Rod Vianneau lives where the railroad ends. If that sounds like a country and western song, well, that tracks.
Every night you go to bed crying.
Over the decades, Vianneau has played countless shows and recorded 5 albums. Here he's playing along to a cover of a Vern Gosden song he recorded called That Just About Does It.
That just about does it, don't it?
The way Rod tells it, growing up, he didn't have much choice when it came to performing.
My mother used to make concerts, you know, and I was young at the time, 5 or 6 years old, and she'd bring me there and everything else, and she had learned me some little songs, and I'd get up on a little Coke box and Coca-Cola box to be able to sing, you know, a little song.
It's tearing us apart to stay together.
But then one day in the 1990s, everything changed, and Vianneau put music on the back burner. The impetus was a news program he saw on TV.
These orphans here were speaking about that they had lost their lives and everything else, you know, their lives were stolen, taken away, and my wife, she said, I'm one of them.
This is my wife, Clarina Duguay's personal dossier.
Clarina Duguay has been married to Vianneau for over 50 years, but it took nearly 30 years for her to tell him she was a Duplessis orphan.
J'ai rentré là à l'âge de 9 ans, mais sorti là de 7 ans. C'est grâce à ma soeur, puis je la remercie au fond du cœur.
Named after former Quebec Premier Maurice Duplessis, the term Duplessis orphan refers to children who in the late 1930s to mid-60s were moved from orphanages to psychiatric hospitals. But the vast majority had no mental illness. And many weren't even orphans in the true sense of the word.
Ma mère a tombé malade, et le curé du village avec le médecin, il a dit voir mon père. Puis il a dit à mon père, il dit, les deux petites filles vont être bien avec les soeurs, ils vont se faire instruire. Puis là, le prêtre puis le médecin nous a rentré dans son char. Elle nous a poussé dans un char qu'on peut embarquer, puis moi je ne voulais pas embarquer, puis ils m'ont forcé d'embarquer, puis je pleurais tout le temps pour ma mère.
Duguay had every reason to cry. she and her sister were taken to an orphanage hundreds of kilometers away. And all that crying made her stick out to one of the nuns at the Catholic-run orphanage. Her first night there was just the beginning of the abuse to come.
Elle m'a levé, puis elle m'a emmené dans le bain pour prendre un bain de l'eau glacée. Puis elle a dit, lave-toi ici, puis elle m'a fait agression sexuelle en bas. Et puis, j'ai pleuré toute la nuit.
Duguay was 9 years old. It was 1945, and in Quebec, the Catholic Church controlled education and social services. Their power in the province at the time is hard to overstate. In the early 1950s, Duplessis realized that federal subsidies paid $2.25 a day for mental patients versus 70 cents a day for orphans. He shortly thereafter collaborated with the church to wrongly classify thousands of orphans, in the terms of the day, as mentally retarded. This decades-long collusion between church and state in Quebec is known as La Grande Noisseur, the Great Darkness.
They were just children and they had their lives stolen.
When Duguay was 11 years old, she was told she was going to take a trip into town. Instead, she ended up in a mental institution on the outskirts of Quebec City. Needless to say, the conditions there weren't any better.
J'étais beaucoup magadée. Ils m'ont battue avec la camisole de force.
Aside from physical and sexual abuse, Duguay never got a proper education. For years, her record wrongly said that she was mentally deficient. She is one of thousands of Duplessis orphans. The abuse she suffered is not unique. Some had it even worse.
Juste côté de ta tête de même, là, tu vois, c'est juste ici, le gars. Puis là, il y en a tout partout.
Paul Saint-Aubin was institutionalized and eventually lobotomized. He was physically abused, received electroshock treatment,
Largatil, 100 milligrams,
and was given massive amounts of drugs. But perhaps the worst part is that the religious order that took in his unwed mother so she could give birth told her that Saint-Aubin had died. During the Great Darkness, it was considered a sin to give birth out of wedlock.
The young girls were pregnant and they would have their babies there.
Saint-Aubin was born in downtown Montreal in the now-shuttered Salle de Miséricorde Hospital. Salle de Miséricorde translates as Sisters of Mercy, but their reputation during the Great Darkness says otherwise. After his unwed mother was told he died, Saint-Aubin was eventually sent to an orphanage. From there, he bounced around. At the age of 11, he was sent to work on a farm where he says he was abused.
J'ai à la pauvreté. Ben bonheur le matin, je travaille en main quotidienne. Le matin, ben bonheur, je lève avant eux autres qui se lèvent.
A fight with the farmer eventually landed him here, a Joliette mental hospital. But his mother never truly believed he died. In the 1980s, she found Saint-Aubin after she did an access to information request. The nuns had named him Joseph-Paul Forain, but kept his birthday the same. He was living in a halfway house in Joliette when his mother showed up at his door. According to Saint-Aubin, once she saw his face, she knew it was him.
Quand j'ai rencontré ma mère, je ne croyais pas comme tout le monde a cru en Dieu.
Six ans sur la ferme.
Ouais, travaille gratuitement sans faire payer.
Aside for a few years on the farm, Saint-Aubin had spent his life in institutions, 35 years in total.
Libre, vie à ma mère comme je l'entends.
But not long enough. They spent 3 years together before she died. But before she did, she made sure Paul's name was changed to Saint-Aubin, and that he got his rightful status as an Abenaki from the Wallanak First Nation.
Je suis bien content de sortir de là, parce que les religieux, ils disaient, ben, d'être carré.
By coincidence, Saint-Aubin, Vianneau, and Duguay ended up being neighbors. Around the time, Vianneau decided to replace his guitar with a protest sign.
I thought I'd get into that. I want to get justice.
Along with other orphans, they organized protests, petitioned politicians, hired lawyers, complained to the Quebec Ombudsman. The end result?
Au nom du Québec et de son gouvernement, je leur exprime nos plus sincères excuses.
In 1999, Quebec Premier Lucien Bouchard apologized and offered the orphans $3 million. In 2001, the orphans came to an agreement with Quebec, $10,000 per orphan, plus $1,000 per year spent in a mental institution. Claire-Lina Duguay was paid $15,000. She, and any other orphans who signed, were required to waive their rights to future litigation against the religious orders and government.
Pour s'acheter un char pour tout de même pour aller travailler ces affaires-là. Puis là, c'est sûr que j'ai signé. J'ai pas de choix. Là.
Perhaps most infuriating for the orphans, the church has never apologized or offered to pay compensation, despite there being other precedents.
Over in the United States, they were all paid out.
Villeneau has a point. In 2003, the Boston Archdiocese paid out $85 million to victims of sexual abuse. More recently in New Jersey, the diocese coughed up $87 million for hundreds of victims, a fraction of the at least 3,000 suspected Du Plessis orphans. The Boston settlement included funding for counseling, and the New Jersey victims also received apologies.
This is the L'Orfelino St. George, the St. George Orphanage.
Technically, this is where the St. George's Orphanage used to be. St. Aubin says he spent some time here after the farm. Now all that remains is this giant cross. When asked what he remembers of this place, he doesn't hold back.
Le malheur puis le péché, puis prêté par les crimes, par les religieux, par l'avènement. Ça rentre pas au paradis, ils vont aller en enfer.
And so, the battle continues. In 2023, a proposed class action was struck down by the Supreme Court. But this past May, a breakthrough. The Celle de la Charité and Quebec City's Health Authority recently settled with orphans from the Mont-Youville Orphanage for $65 million. So hope remains that some of the religious orders behind the Du Plessis orphans might still have to pay.
Ils vont payer pas des bouchées de pain, ils refusent des miettes de pain.
Villeneau adds that over the years he has met about 24 other indigenous Du Plessis orphans. Aside from Saint-Aubin, APTN was able to confirm 3 others, all Algonquin from the Kitigan-Zibi area.
It's one of the rare lists that we have of the locations of Indigenous people in mental hospitals.
Meanwhile, new information has come to light that there may be more.
We started discovering very intimate links between Du Plessis orphans and the way that Indigenous children were also treated.
Hello, I'm Rick Harp, host of APTN News Brief, a daily podcast version of the nightly broadcast of APTN National News. Available on all major podcast platforms, APTN News Brief is your quick way to hear the headlines every weekday morning. Learn more at aptnnews.ca/podcasts.
Hervé Beltranon learned how to play this song nearly 7 decades ago at the Mont Providence Orphanage.
La chanson importante pour le Mont Providence, après ça, l'hymne national du Mont Providence.
He and other orphans would be enlisted to sing it for visiting dignitaries. Bertrand says he once performed for a cardinal.
J'ai jamais appris à lire la musique. J'apprenais toutes les notes par cœur dans ma tête.
The lyrics celebrate God's care of his followers. For example, bestow upon us in abundance all good things here below. The thing is, little good was bestowed to young Bertrand at the Mont Providence orphanage. Quite the opposite. He was forced to work unpaid for long hours as a child, and was deprived of an education after being wrongfully classified as mentally deficient.
Comme deux jours avant, une sœur me l'a dit, elle dit... avait de la peine à pleurer. Elle dit, savez-vous qu'est-ce qu'ils vont faire avec vous autres? Sinon, vous allez tous être des fous.
But the most traumatic incident happened when a monitor cornered 16-year-old Bertrand in a stalled elevator.
Durant le carême, les sœurs se promènent dans l'édifice puis chantaient des chansons religieuses, ils appelaient ça des psaumes. Puis les psaumes qu'ils chantaient, c'était des affaires comme... La 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 la, ora pro nobis. Puis toute la durant 2-3 heures, je promène dans le passage, puis ça a pris le, je sais pas que ce qu'il prit, ora pro nobis. Puis lui, durant ça là, il m'enculait. Puis à chaque fois qu'il disait ora pro nobis, il me rentrait ça au fond.
The rape was so bad, Bertrand had to get surgery on his rectum. He was sent to another mental institution in the east end of Montreal to get an operation and recover. The notorious Saint-Jean-de-Dieu Hospital, where lobotomies and other experimental treatments were regularly being performed.
Il y avait un gros châssis, une grosse fenêtre en vitre, puis on voyait toute la ferme. Puis il y avait deux cimetières, un pour les malades, puis à gauche, c'était celui des enfants, ceux qui avaient fait des tests.
Long since rebranded, the former Saint-Jean-de-Dieu Hospital still stands, but the cemetery down the hill is long gone. In its place is the headquarters for Quebec's Liquor Commission, known as the SAQ. In May, Bertrand and a small group of orphans gathered here to protest a warehouse expansion. But they weren't alone.
Quebec will have to reckon with the way that their dead are being treated here, as this is very alarming.
Gatineta Horn is a longtime activist and currently a spokesperson for a group called the Mohawk Mothers. She says she's here to not only support the orphans, but also because she suspects among the dead possibly buried nearby are Indigenous children.
Certainly in our communities we have missing children. We've known about that because our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents told these stories to us.
There's a great concern and worry that if no search dogs are brought on the site, human remains will be desecrated and potentially destroyed.
Philippe Blouin is an anthropologist and PhD candidate at McGill University. He's advocating on behalf of the Duplessis orphans and Mohawk mothers regarding the warehouse expansion dispute.
These are the remains that were found in 1975 when the SAQ built its first warehouse. This is the official list of the people who were buried there, more than 2,000 people.
Known as the Pixie Cemetery due to its proximity to a pig farm, the discovery of the mass grave made headlines. And while the remains from that dig have been moved to another site, the orphans and Mohawk mothers suspect there are more on this empty lot earmarked for expansion, right next to where the mass grave was found.
It's very hard to, you know, assess whether this is accurate or not. Is this a full list? There's some anonymous children.
The SAQ had the land examined by experts who dug trenches and found animal bone fragments, but no human remains. But the Canadian Archaeological Association weighed in on the dispute, saying cadaver dogs should be brought in to make sure. The SAQ has declined, and the orphans have since responded with a cease and desist letter.
So this is a letter from a doctor at the Allen Memorial Institute asking for the list of institutions where Indigenous people are hospitalized for mental illness.
Meanwhile, Blouin's research shows that there might be something to the Mohawk mother's oral history of missing kids. This list from 1964 shows dozens of Indigenous patients spread out all over Quebec, many in mental institutions that held Duplessis orphans.
We found some very compelling pieces of evidence of the transfers of children, how it happened, especially in the 50s and 60s, while the Duplessis orphan era was ongoing. He was deemed to be undisciplined, this boy. They sent him to Mont-Saint-Antoine.
Blouin says child protection laws were used to grab kids who weren't in residential or day schools. His research shows that Indigenous children who didn't attend school for 3 consecutive days could be declared juvenile delinquents and incarcerated.
It was an official policy that these children were wards of the state. They were a state property. The state could do whatever they wanted with them.
Blouin's research also found a 1956 mention of 120 so-called difficult children being treated with new drugs in Montreal and being kept for observation, as well as a 1963 study of 92 Mohawk children from Ganawage, just south of Montreal. The study references a previous report that refers to Mohawk children as a social problem, and its findings come to a similar conclusion, calling Mohawk children less ready to identify with human society, and therefore a social risk.
I am dropping you a few lines to let you know that I want my daughter to take her out from that prison place.
Blouin is reading from a 1953 letter a Mi'kmaq woman wrote to a social worker asking for her daughter to be sent home. The mother's request is refused. Bluin says the inherent ethnocentrism of Canada made the institutionalization of Indigenous children not only acceptable, but desirable.
And so this intersected with current searches in Quebec for Indigenous children who were lost in the healthcare system.
Bluin is referring to the ongoing investigation into Quebec's ghost babies, the name for at least 199 Indigenous children who went missing after being placed in a Quebec institution before 1992. The search is aided by a provincial law passed in 2021, loosening access to information laws for Indigenous families to look for missing kids.
Si Violetta a été vraiment décédée, ben c'est de savoir où elle a été inhumée.
But the law has its limitations, especially if you happen to be an orphan.
The problem with the current legislation is that children who don't have an immediate family, their records cannot be accessed by anyone. In the United States, records become available after 50 years. In Canada, many records, it takes 100 years, so it's really after no one is alive anymore and no one can be prosecuted.
So, is there a smoking gun linking missing Indigenous kids and Du Plessis orphans? Not yet. But the similarities of how vulnerable children of all ethnicities were treated in Quebec's Great Darkness are obvious.
On appelle ça des casse pilaires. Les autres faisaient bénir ça pour démontrer que le diable peut pas rentrer dans le corps d'un enfant.
Following his stay at Saint-Jean-de-Dieu, Beltran ended up in a reform school.
C'est ça, l'ancienne bâtisse.
Which he describes as a picnic compared to the orphanage. He became a plumber and built a life for himself. He eventually received $20,000 from Quebec for being a Du Plessis orphan. Now at the age of 81, he still advocates for orphans, and he's found some peace with God.
C'est pas l'Église fait ça, c'est des gens. Des gens, là, comme les prêtres, les sœurs. C'est eux autres qui ont fait des mauvais coups, mais le bon Dieu, je prie encore le bon Dieu. Puis ma mère s'appelait Wanda Les Tourneaux.
Recently, through DNA testing and Ancestry.com, Bertrand was able to track down some relatives who tell him his mother was Abenaki, although that remains to be confirmed.
Moi, j'espère avant de mourir que qu'on vient à bout de régler ça, ce dossier-là.
Back in Joliette, Vianot, Duguay, and Saint-Aubin are waiting on what's likely their final legal attempt to hold the Catholic religious orders accountable. Vianot wants financial restitution for orphans before it's too late.
They would live their lives and have a bit of happiness before passing away.
APTN Investigates reached out to several religious orders involved in this story. None responded to our request for interview, but they are still active. For instance, the Sisters of Misericord, who ran the hospital where Saint-Aubin was born, are on the board for this daycare center bearing their name. The daycare's mandate? To help single mothers. As for Saint-Aubin, he takes life day by day. He likes to ride his bike, and is proud that despite it all, he looks young for his 72 years. Saint-Aubin may be aiming to live a long life, but will he, or any Du Plessis orphan, live long enough to hear an apology from the Catholic Church? God only knows.
APTN presents a captivating journey into the heart of the North with our latest podcast, The Place That Thaws.
Some areas that used to be safe are no longer safe.
Hosted by me, Danielle Parody. Join us as we uncover the intricacies of life on a changing coast. Subscribe and listen to The Place That Thaws.
If you'd like to hear more from Investigates, visit aptnnews.ca/podcasts. You can watch APTN Investigates every Friday on APTN. Visit us on social media and catch up on our stories at aptnnews.ca, the APTN News YouTube channel, and the APTN News app. The Investigates team includes reporters Brittany Guillot, Christopher Reed, and Kenneth Jackson, and video journalists Rob Smith and Tom Fenario. I'm Josh Grummet, and I'm an associate producer for the show. Our producer is Colin Crozier, and our executive producer is Paul Barnsley. Members of the APTN National News team also contribute to many of our stories. Once again, thanks for listening.
I'm Kathleen Martins, a reporter with APTN News. Homeless, houseless, shelterless people, they aren't hard to find in Winnipeg. They're on the sidewalks, in bus shelters, and down alleyways. They're living in tents and squatting in empty buildings. They're even sleeping in abandoned cars. But who are they? Hear their stories in my new 5-part podcast called Our Relatives. Listen on your favorite player.